Welcome to the Real Talk Weekly podcast, where we discuss news, culture, life, and dive into deep conversations about our faith. Here's your host, Alan Reed.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Real Talk podcast. We have a great lineup for you.
Oh, boy.
James.
Hi.
An amusing park. No.
Amusing
it's amusing.
Park. It is an amusement park. It is amusing. Amusing story.
I went there a lot.
An amusing park gone wild. We'll talk about that. A mammoth meatball.
Ooh, gross.
And a
saw that article.
And a dead deer. I didn't know what to say about that.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
I told you before we started. Call it oh, dear.
Oh, you did.
Now you spoiled it.
Yeah, it's been a rough morning.
Spoilers.
So you guys doing well?
Yeah. Yep.
I was until you ruined my arm.
I mean, my sciatica is acting up today.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
Is it?
Yeah, a little bit.
Like sciatic?
Yeah.
Pain?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, I have a compression mat in my office if you want to borrow it for half an hour.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It works great
for Alan.
Yeah. We bought one.
Like, it works so good they bought one.
Yeah. Yep. Came home from a trip and Ashley's laying on the floor using that thing. I'm just like, she loves that thing.
I feel
it's like
too
the painting at Crystal
right
Bridges
now.
Of the lady that.
at some point, I asked Alan, I said, I'm never going to get it back, am I?
No.
So we bought one.
Yeah.
All right. So here's the icebreaker. And this is going to go off of the deer story, the oh deer story. Have you ever been caught stealing? If you haven't been caught, have you ever stolen anything? This is confession time.
Yes.
Okay. Did that take a long
time? Yeah. I thought this is going to take me a long time.
No.
All right.
So I was shopping with my mom.
Ooh.
And we were in like a Loft or Banana Republic store, kind of like that. Mm. I had been like kind of sifting through some of the jewelry. I had a long cardigan on.
She's the jewel
thief.
And it
was knit. And so I leaned over and I knocked over like a stand of earrings. Mm-hmm. So I'm like putting it back, everything. We walk out the door. We set the alarms off. And I was like, what the heck is going on? My mom's like looking through her bag, you know, checking for those little ink tags because you can't get those off unless you go to an automotive store or.
Automotive?
Yeah.
Really?
Real life happened in a small town for a funeral one time. O'Reilly really came through.
They have the powerful magnets at the...
Wow.
Yeah. So, fun fact.
That sounds
life
like a
hack,
good story, too.
Life hack. You can get those taken off of the automotive store or back into the store you just came from. So, they were like, don't worry about it. It happens all the time. We get about 200 yards down through the mall. I reach down in my pockets, and there is a pack of earrings that has stuck to my cardigan. So,
wow.
Accidental theft. I start breaking out, sweating. I'm like almost in tears. I'm like, Mom, these earrings are stuck to me. I didn't take them. And I'm like 20. And so she's like,
yesterday.
I know you didn't take them. And so she's like, we just need to go back. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Mom, they're going to think I'm an actual thief.
Yeah.
And I'm 20 and that's the prime age to be a thief. And
really?
Yeah, you're broke. You know what I mean? You're broke at 20. And so it makes more sense to steal stuff.
I feel like. Okay.
A broke college student.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This seems lame because it's an accidental theft story.
Yeah, it's
like,
my
we
only
want, like,
theft story.
We want, like,
I mean,
real
honest,
theft.
I did something like that the other day.
But like. What was your theft story?
Alan stole some earrings.
I could have actually gotten in trouble.
So it was water bottles. What?
I could have actually gotten arrested, probably.
You could have.
Well, I flat out stole. I mean, it was probably single digit age, but, you know, when I grew up, when the age I grew up, it was like every time we would go to Walmart, I would leave my mom because culturally that was okay.
Oh, man.
And I would go to.
And you'd hide like among the clothes.
Oh, always. Yeah. I've been left at stores more times than I can count. That might be why I have psychological issues.
No,
but. So it wasn't anything ordinary for me to not be attended to by my parents, right? And so I was at the grocery store one time with Mom, and I really wanted a Kit Kat. I really, really wanted a Kit Kat, and she wouldn't buy me a Kit Kat. She's like, no, you don't need a Kit Kat. It's going to spoil your dinner.
It's her fault.
So I totally stole a Kit Kat. And so I left the store before my mom came out because, again, different time, left the cars unlocked. Usually my mom left the stinking keys in the ignition. So went out to the car, and I was sitting there in the front seat eating the Kit Kat. And Mom comes out, and there's a half-eaten Kit Kat, and she knew I didn't have any money. I was like 7. She goes, where'd you get that? I was like, I found it.
Nice.
You know, typical kid answer,
nice.
Right? Like, I found it. She said, you stole that, didn't you? And I go, I took it from the store. I mean, like, you know, little kid, right? So she made me go back inside and talk to the store manager.
As you should.
And pay the store manager and apologize for stealing a Kit Kat.
Good job, Mom.
And so
Did you get a spanking?
Well, I'm sure I did, but if you know, we don't talk about that because nowadays that would get you.
He's blinked out.
She hit me so hard it knocked that memory clean out of my head. But no, so yeah, I genuinely like stole a Kit Kat because I was a little kid. Don't tell me little kids aren't sinful. Like, seriously, we are.
Oh, no, kids are sinful.
So, I legit stole. You accidentally stole. David?
I've been racking my brain. I cannot think
You've
of
anything. You've never stole anything?
What about whenever you stole Lauren's heart?
Oh.
No, that didn't happen either.
So. She was just like, here.
He begged.
Yeah. That's probably a better explanation. I cannot think. The only thing I can think of, but it wasn't even me. Like, it was my roommates.
You were an accomplice.
I saw it happen, but I didn't.
You didn't report it?
No. David. Okay, so you know those trash cans at Razorback Games? Those cardboard ones that are like...
Oh, yeah.
Square.
Yeah.
And they have like the top and it's just a cardboard cutout.
I don't really know.
They stole
how
one
those
of
work.
Those and that was it. That's
the story.
That's the story.
Wow.
But I honestly cannot remember any time that I stole something.
Yeah.
That's good. You should have really hyped that story up more.
But it's not even that good of a story. I don't want to hype up something that's not even worth hyping.
I'll keep mine short. Kindergarten. Mm. I forgot my lunch ticket at home.
Uh-oh.
I don't
oh
know.
Gosh.
Do they still do that these days? Where
no.
you have
I think
lunch
they
ticket?
Put like a thing on an account and kids just have to.
You know, you used to have to pick what you wanted to eat.
You know,
like
the little paper
the
tickets that you can still buy and kind of divvy out if you're doing an event. We've done it at our church, so you get a little lunch ticket. And I didn't have mine. I forgot mine at home, and I was freaking out. Like, I'm not going to be able to eat lunch.
Yeah.
This is not good. And I can remember I was sitting in the back of the room on the left hand side, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do? And I noticed that one of the girls in the front row, her ticket was sitting out on the desk.
Oh, my goodness.
So I asked the teacher, I need to go to the bathroom. This is awful. And so, I walked straight down the front row.
Was this Priscilla?
Right past the teacher's desk. And Priscilla. I just casually grabbed the ticket and put it in my pocket as I left
It was
the
Priscilla's,
room.
Wasn't it?
No, it was.
That's why she didn't
Did
like
she
you.
Get
I'm not
to
sure
eat
if I
lunch?
Knew. I don't know if I knew Priscilla at that time. What's that?
Did she get to eat lunch?
I'm sure there's
oh,
more
yeah,
to this
she
story.
Got to eat lunch. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
While you watch.
So as I went to the bathroom, as I went
Peter.
To, I was in the bathroom and the teacher came in the bathroom.
Oh, scandalous.
That's embarrassing. You can't do that.
Oh, yeah. And she said, Alan, you're coming with me.
And you're like, wait,
oh, no,
let
she,
me finish
I think
peeing.
She asked me to empty my pockets, and I emptied my
At
pockets.
At least you didn't have to, like,
she
pee your
grabbed
pants
me by the arm,
she took care of it.
And she took me straight to the principal's office, and he called my mom.
Oh, no.
It was awful. So, yeah.
Did you get spanked?
Oh, I'm sure I got spanked.
No, I mean, like, at school, did you get spanked?
No, I don't think so.
Really? But you're old enough that you probably got spanked at school.
No, I don't think
That's
so.
That's a southern
what?
Thing.
That is a southern thing.
It's not a northern thing.
Or like the, my dad went to no. Catholic school, but they got rulers on their knuckles.
I've heard yeah. of that. No, like my in elementary school, our principal had a paddle.
Absolutely not.
And
not
we would
in
get
Wisconsin.
Spanked.
Yeah,
we would get spanked.
I don't think in Connecticut it happened either.
No.
So
That's definitely
it.
A southern thing.
Well, yeah. That was in Kansas City where we got spanked, so it wasn't really south.
I mean, but you're like...
But that my
South
dad
adjacent.
My dad grew up in Kansas City too.
Really?
So yeah.
Yeah, we got spanked hardcore.
Mm. Yeah, I learned my lesson. Mm. I can't recall.
That's what's missing in school today. It's corporal punishment.
Rest of my life.
Isn't
so
it corporate.
So yeah. With that, that's the segue.
Corporal punishment.
Segue.
Well,
yes, sir, yes.
It's time for the dish.
So, have you ever just had such a terrible day that you stole two vehicles?
Not yet.
No. This is the title of the article, Rough Day for a Man Driving a Stolen School Bus. And I'm going to forego the last half of the title, but Rough Day for a Man Driving a Stolen School Bus. Well, yeah, it's a rough day. Stole a school bus.
Did he know?
So it started out, this is in York County, Pennsylvania.
That's
the problem. And this was just a couple weeks ago. The man led officers on a high-speed chase in two separate vehicles.
Wait, what?
Yeah, and it's not like they were back-to-back, like he abandoned one and immediately got another one and took off and they've chased him the whole time. No, they lost him for a while and then caught him again, and it was the same guy.
Oh, that bites for him.
So the first vehicle began early Tuesday morning. Yeah, and said, hey, I just stole a car. So early Tuesday morning, the state troopers were they stopped a BMW, right? Great car to steal if you're going to steal a car, right? Because it's fast, it's cool, it's German.
No, they're not very comfortable.
So, with a Florida license plate. Now, it's Pennsylvania, Florida license plate, BMW. They questioned the driver. His name was Tony.
Was
Tony. You know, his name is Tony. So they could see items in the car that appeared to be from a nearby convenience store where a theft had just been reported. But he said, no, I got these from a junkyard. Okay, I got items from a convenience store to a junkyard. That seems to make a lot of sense.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Are they like snacks? Because that's all I buy at a convenience store.
But do you buy that at a junkyard?
No. Exactly. What a stupid so inn. Come on, Tony.
You can buy a quart of oil.
So the but I don't, delicious. Anyway, so there was also a dog. Snack. So I hope the doggo made it out safe. And there was something else in the trunk, which I'll explain that here in a minute. Mm-mm. So he drove away whenever they were asking him to get out of the vehicle and turn the headlights off. Oh, and he turned his headlights off to avoid detection. So this must have been early in the morning when it was still dark enough that, you know, if you turn the headlights off, you can't see. So he drove the BMW and ran over some railroad tracks. Well, BMWs tend to be low to the ground, and he apparently, like, did damage to the car, so he ditched it in a nearby wooded area. Later that same day, the local law enforcement agencies were notified that a school bus had been stolen in a town nearby. So guess what happened? They spotted the bus at a shopping center and then caught up with it. The driver pulled over briefly but drove away, leading them on another high-speed chase. Well, turns out it was Tony. Tony had ditched the Beamer and stolen a school bus instead. That seems like a downgrade to me if you're going to steal something. Steal something.
Well, I think he really wanted to get over those railroad tracks.
He did. No, he read. You were.
How many times have you seen an officer pull over a school bus?
That's true.
I've never seen it.
You don't almost see it. So maybe that was a smart move, right? Maybe that was an intelligent move.
Is Tony a genius?
But
no.
So
no, he's not.
Whenever they caught the school bus, there was no mention of the dog, but the item that was in the BMW had been transferred to the bus, and it was a dead deer.
What about the convenience store snacks?
I don't know about the snacks. I think he might have eaten them in the the chaos.
Hold up. So the dead deer was in...
It was in the BMW.
Oh.
In the trunk.
In the trunk.
What a twist.
And then whenever they caught him in the school bus, he had the dead deer in the school bus.
Sick.
What in the world? So, why? Tony.
No mention of the snacks, no mention of the dog. It's like, well, did he not care about the snacks or the dog? He just cared about the dead deer. I guess so.
Maybe he's got like some like Godfather situation going on where he's... delivering a dead deer to someone's bed. You know what I mean?
Well, he said he was great.
So what he told the officers, like, you know, because I'm sure the question came up, why do you have a dead deer? I was going to use it to fertilize my garden.
Ew.
What? No way that's true.
That's what it's
totally what he said. Yeah. Totally
Tony,
what he said. Needless to
Tony,
say,
Tony.
He's still in prison at the time of the writing of this article.
$100,000
on a $100,000 bail.
Wow. That seems high, doesn't it?
He stole a BMW, a school bus, and killed a deer.
Well, you could have hit
I'm very confused.
And he abandoned a dog and robbed a convenience store.
Do we know that he killed the deer because he stole the car that had the deer in the back of it?
True. Maybe he stole the car because the deer was in the back of it.
But also,
trying to save the deer.
I'm worried about the dogs.
He was trying to save the deer?
Yeah.
I know.
The whole thing. It's got snacks. It's got snacks.
The whole thing with me. Oh, one part that was really funny is whenever, I forgot about this, whenever they caught him, and he abandoned the school bus. He was running away on foot while taking his clothes off. Like, apparently, he thought he was invisible.
He had to be on drugs.
He was screaming, there's no room!
He's like, you can only see me because I have my shirt
on. He had to be on drugs.
Yeah, the $100,000 bail seems accurate.
Yeah. Tony, what are you doing, dog?
Get it together, man.
Real man. Genius.
Crazy.
Yikes.
Okay. Good story. Interesting.
That's definitely a story.
It's a story, all right.
Okay. Let's go next.
Do you want to hear a story about a giant meatball?
I do.
Is it a mammoth meatball?
You don't really want to know a story about this meatball.
I'm curious.
Okay, so have any of you guys seen Better Off Ted?
No.
Mm-mm. It was a show that ran for 2 seasons. Really funny show. Sad that it got canceled. But it's about a company that comes up with like random, like weird things to sell to people. And one of the things that they're trying to sell was scientifically grown meat.
Oh, gross.
And so the whole show is like they're trying to get this meat to work. And every time everybody tastes it, they're like, it tastes like death.
Ew.
But they found out that, you know, like muscles have to contract and the opposite of contract.
Release?
Yeah, sure. Release. And so they sat the whole show.
I'm trying to understand.
So one person in the show had to sit there and massage the meatball the whole time.
Ew.
So that's the only thing I'm thinking about this. But anyways, science is weird. And why we think of things to do in science, it's like one of those things like you shouldn't do it just because you can kind of thing. Well, this company came up with the idea. Well, I guess this is a thing. Like other companies, like there's tons of companies that are trying to create meat and from like cells.
Yeah.
So they're growing meat from random cells. Mm. So they're like, okay, what animals can we just put together to make this meatball? The first thought was, you know, mammoth, woolly mammoth. That's a great idea.
What? Sorry. Yes. Where did they get a woolly mammoth?
So apparently
a tusk.
Oh, they've found them frozen in the Arctic.
Yeah.
Like completely intact, frozen. Haven't you seen Jurassic Park? They just stick
Haven't
a needle in
there.
Haven't
you heard of freezer burn? There's no way that it's
well,
no, good.
No, they didn't eat the mammoth that was in the ice.
So they took the cell. DNA.
Oh, that's right. That's right. This is science. Yeah.
They
okay.
took this. This is science.
They Jurassic Parked it.
So sort of. This startup called Vow took this cell from a mammoth. And they're like, okay, what's the closest thing to a mammoth?
Elephant.
Elephant. Mm-hmm. So they took a cell of an elephant. And then they're like, okay, what can we put this in? Sheep was the obvious answer. So it is mammoth, elephant, and sheep put together.
These poor sheep get used for everything.
They really do. They really do. Aww. So they grew this meat, quotation marks, into a apparently to a just like a roll. And then they said they had to a roll loaf? It up into the meatball. It wasn't like just growing as a meatball. They had to like form it into a meatball. Wow.
Well, have you ever seen meat grow as a meatball? I mean,
no,
I've never seen meat grow.
You have to form. Yeah, you have. There. You've watched baby cows turn into full-sized cows.
So they're trying to. The unfortunate thing is they chose mammoth because it was
that.
A political statement. It
looks like a
because
don't,
of climate
don't
change.
Say what it
climate
looks
change.
Like.
Because climate change.
You know.
So this whole thing was a political.
It was a political statement by saying, you know, like climate change killed the mammoths, so we're trying to bring them back. And so, what's going to save our world from climate change?
Woolly mammoths, science meat.
Science meat.
Yeah, that's also why people are eating bugs again these days.
Really?
Yeah, I've been reading.
Like, well, apparently, you know, like that's the big thing, the healthy. Methane thing. You know, and
cows, and they fart too much. And
it's causing.
I love the fact that the company had to state, this is not an April Fool's joke. This is a real
this
innovation.
Is real, guys.
It didn't look like meat. It doesn't.
Well, why would it?
It's supposed to, but it's, they're
have you ever heard of
meat.
A dung beetle?
Yeah.
It looks like something a dung beetle
would
roll around the desert.
Ew.
100%.
Yeah. It looks grainy.
Yeah.
It doesn't look
No, it looks gluten free.
Yeah, it
does. This meat is gluten free.
Yeah, that's exactly
there
right.
Might
that's
be people listening to this that feel attacked. You know?
Meat free, gluten free, taste free.
So it's about the size between they said between a softball and a volleyball. So this is a big meatball. It's big.
It's a mammoth.
That's
meatball.
An expensive meatball.
Feed a family right there.
And apparently to get it to the place that they were showing off, they had to glaze it, and cook it
like donut glaze or.
That's what it looks like.
And
kind of looks like a glazed
quote inside of it.
Hole.
It says, when it's being prepared, first slow baked, then finished off on the outside with a blowtorch. And then quotes, it smelled good.
No, it didn't.
No,
who
it
lied?
Didn't. Don't
they
lie.
Got paid a lot of money.
But the best quote in this whole article is from the manager or CEO of Vow. Who's doing this project, said, it's so super fascinating to think that adding the protein from an animal that went extinct 4,000 years ago gave it a totally unique and new aroma, something we haven't smelled as a population for a very long time. Yeah.
Probably tastes
That's like. What's interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's, I mean...
Your face.
I am so disturbed. I'm also imagining it like an air mattress, like you roll it out and then it grows.
Yeah.
And-
yeah. Essentially the same thing.
Listen, my
Probably
wife's company.
Same consistency as well.
Yeah. My wife's company has tested, like, it's not this. It's not meat made out of meat, not meat. I don't know.
Science.
They've tested like the plant based meats, and I've gone in for those taste tests, and there's some things I'm like, huh, I didn't know that wasn't meat.
Yeah.
There's some things where I'm like, huh, this should have never been made.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I feel like this would land on the latter side.
Oh,
of that
absolutely.
Because it just doesn't seem like something. I don't know what it seems.
You know
like.
What I hope happens? I hope woolly mammoths come back, and they're like, "Give me back my cells," and then these scientists stop doing stuff like this because that is so disgusting.
Listen, if
you
woolly
know, the
mammoths,
best part of that is that woolly mammoths can talk.
Yeah, honestly,
I was getting ready to say, I was like, that the best part is the fact that the woolly mammoth can say, "Give me back my cells."
Yeah.
I'm like, man.
Listen, the world has changed since they've been around.
It's true.
You know
That's
what
true.
I mean?
Have you
they
seen
could,
Ice Age?
They could come back super intelligent.
Ray Romano
and Queen Latifah talking woolly mammoths.
Right. Because they're obviously they're Italian.
Scrat was my favorite
meatballs,
character.
So, okay, wow. Moving on to so not
nobody,
sick
do you
things.
Hear me talking about Scrat?
Oh, is that the squirrel?
Yes.
I love the squirrel.
I love the squirrel.
I wonder how many years it'll be before we get to try it.
Probably never. But I could see us trying like chicken or beef.
Did you notice in the article though that Singapore has already been approved for cell-based meat like this?
It's literally the only place in the world.
Okay.
I think Japan was another one that's
Singapore. Something that makes my palms sweat is thinking about like, would they ever get to the point where they take a human cell?
Absolutely.
That's cannibalism, Hannibal Lecter.
And he's over there like,
but goes great with some fava beans.
There's plenty of humans to go around.
And a nice Chianti.
Talk about saving your climate.
The airplane movie where they...
Snakes on a plane?
Airplane movie?
Airplane.
Where they eat the friend.
No.
I know what you're talking about. That was a true story that was based on a story of a plane that crashed in the mountains.
Yeah. And they just...
And they had to eat the dead bodies in order to stay alive.
Stored them in the snow.
That's disgusting.
You haven't seen that movie?
I'm cutting this part from the episode.
I don't watch plane crash movies.
It is true, though.
All right.
Check it out.
Talk about my hometown, Allie.
More important things. Okay. This is actually kind of a sad story. However, the rules they created from this are what is comical. So, Kansas City has Worlds of Fun.
Best theme park ever.
Yes, best theme park ever.
That was the one you were bragging on the other day, wasn't it?
It's the reason I don't like Branson, Silver Dollar City, is because this Worlds of Fun is cheaper and has way more rides.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's obviously
got
some
other issues.
It's
not nearly as cool. Yeah, it's got some problems of its own. So, on April 8th, they opened the doors day before Easter to celebrate the 50th anniversary season, which is very special, right? Big deal. But a fight involving multiple juveniles and a large crowd broke out. So, people have dropped their kids off at this park for years. I was just having this conversation the other day with one of our staff members. It wasn't James, but someone else from the Kansas City area who used to do student ministry. Actually, it's Brock.
It's Brock.
Yeah, I would say he's on the theology podcast. So he was saying that they would never take students there and just let them go because people literally come and just leave their kids all
day. Which didn't used to happen when I was younger.
Yeah. So, well, it's happening now. So... Anyways, they got alerted that this fight had broken out inside the park. It's like 7:30 at night. There were like 150 juveniles involved fight, right? So then...
What is this, West Side Story?
Juveniles. Honestly, I like the fact, juveniles.
It is... It's,
street youths.
It really should be like East Side Story, right? Isn't this on the East Side? Okay, yeah. So... Anyways...
Kansas City.
Police show up. They're taking care of it. A young girl... punches a police officer in the face and she gets arrested. I kind of like the scandal of this story. So anyways, then they cleared out the park around 8:30. So it took about an hour for all of us to get settled and get people arrested, get them back to their mom and dad. Here is the new chaperone policy that they launched just 1 week later. Guests ages 15 or younger must be accompanied by a chaperone who is at least 21 years old to be admitted to stay in the park after 4 p.m.
Yes, because at 21, you make great decisions as
but
well.
But also, if you want to fight, get there before 4 p.m. You know what? Send out the text, send out the tweet, put it on Instagram stories, whatever, where you're going to be. Get the pot stirred, fight before 4, get out of there. And the chaperone must be present with a valid government-issued ID with date of birth at ticket entry. Because you're right, 21-year-olds have fake IDs and also...
17-year-olds have fake IDs to show that they're 21.
Yes, that's the thing. So anyways, this is the solution, is that you have to be accompanied by an adult after 4 p.m. Because nothing bad happens before 4 p.m. is what we've learned.
What if they did that because they would lose so many sales? Like,
no, so here's the thing. Have you been to the park?
Anything, they're gaining sales because you have to pay for the chaperone.
Have you been to Worlds of Fun?
No, I'm not a theme park person.
So the thing about Worlds of Fun is during the daytime, it's virtually like it's so well lit because, I mean, yeah, they've got trees and stuff, but the park itself is like very open.
Yeah.
But at night, there's easily areas where you could go do something like start a fight and it would be difficult to find you, get to you, all that kind of stuff. And so one of the things that supposedly they've been doing is they've been doing drone security.
Oh, cool.
And so drone security works really well during the daytime, but doesn't work as well at night.
Yeah.
And so that's probably why this whole thing is like, after 4 p.m., you have to be accompanied by someone. I just think that...
They could push it back, though. It doesn't get dark at 4.
Well, true, especially during the season that this is open. It doesn't get dark until almost 9. Mm-hmm. But it's just silly to me that 21 is the age. I'm like, I think you need to be older than 21 to really
be a chaperone. If Fight Club has taught me anything...
You don't talk about it.
Yeah. That too. You don't talk about it.
But yeah.
But it's definitely people older than 21.
Yeah, I'm going to also guess that there were 21-year-olds involved in this.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know.
I kind of wish that they were like just breaking into song and doing their dance like fights.
It was actually, West Side Story. Yeah.
That'd make this way better.
Yeah.
They have a ride there called the taxi where you drive like this car that's on the track. So you can't really drive a car, but you think you're driving a car. As a kid, it was my favorite thing because I'm like, look, I'm driving. And they look like Model Ts. They could like do this whole scene on that ride and like break out and stop traffic and, you know, have their dance fights.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Love it.
So anyways, if you're going to Worlds of Fun, just know that.
Bring your boxing gloves.
Before four. After four, drop them in the car and come back in with your mom. Mm.
With your mom.
Crazy.
It is crazy.
Apparently, it's not the first.
That's pretty crazy.
Did you read the accompanying segment? It's not the first theme park to do that.
Yeah, Knott's Berry.
Yeah, Knott's Berry
like
Farm.
It's like the malls these days. I mean, actually, the malls are empty these
days. Yeah, what malls?
But like, once upon a time, it was just like a place to go shopping, family friendly, and then it became like where all the teenagers hang out. And
so I'll tell you how. You know, you're talking about parents dropping their kids off at an amusement park. My parents would drop us off at the Dollar Movie Theater at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday and say, okay, here you go, and give us $20 and say, watch a bunch of movies, and they would pick us up at like 11.
That'd be great. Hey, I would love that as a kid.
It's cheaper than childcare.
It is.
Yeah, it really is.
We're alone at a movie theater.
Also, that was like the 80s?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a different time.
It was definitely different.
Different time. It's the deep dish. All right. Well, let's look at the deep dish, guys. Okay. So, long time punk rocker. And I don't know this person, but I realize that they're from Australia.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s. His name is Nick Cave. Says the best way to. There was a bad word in the title, by the way.
Yeah. We're not.
And so, instead of using that word, I'm going to use the word mess. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like
it. So, long time punk rocker Nick Cave says best way to mess with people is become a conservative churchgoer. So I thought that was pretty interesting there. So if you don't know who Cave is, which is probably all of us listening to this, but he actually was a famous performer back in the 80s from Australia. Those of you who are old, maybe you've heard of Birthday Party. That was a band that he formed. And then Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
Nope.
He needs some help working on names for the band.
Birthday party is kind of cool.
Remember, England put out someone named Engelbert Humperdinck. Just going to go ahead and say that.
True. And nobody forgot him. So,
well, he was recently on a podcast called Unheard by Freddie Sayers, and he was just interviewing him, and evidently just an intriguing guy because he's known as being kind of a rebel back in the day, you know, kind of a bad boy type guy.
A bad seed, would you say?
Yes, a bad seed. But a lot of his music now has changed, and come to find out through the interview, after his son turned 15 years old, passed away, died a tragic death. And so that really impacted the singer here. And so Nick is just kind of sharing his story about how the guy was just saying, well, it seems like you've changed a lot. And he says, I still like to mess with people. Mm-hmm. Used a different word, but and so he asked him, well, how do you mess with people in 2023? And he says, by being a conservative and a Christian, being a churchgoer. And so that's what kind of attracted us to this article, because, you know, when you get to thinking about it, our culture today is very PC and kind of rule following, but you see this
PC as in what?
Personal
politically
computer.
Correct. Yeah.
I believe personal I'm more Mac than PC.
And so you do see this underlying movement of people who are being anti-establishment that's really a more conservative type bent away from that.
Yeah.
And I've been like, wow, you know, these people that I'm hearing that are kind of on the edge, I relate to in some ways.
It seems like an oxymoron, the being radical conservative.
Yeah. It does, but it's the left who are now more authoritarian. When I was a kid, it was the right. That's where you have your movies like you have Grease. You have what's the one with the
West Side
the,
Story,
the pastor's kid and dancing.
Oh, Footloose.
Footloose. So and it was a rebellion against the status quo of, you know, religion,
dirty
school.
Dancing.
Yeah, all that.
Just dance movies.
All these dance movies.
So, but nowadays it's the PC culture where people are just pushing back against that. And really it's moving towards people being even thinking a little bit more conservatively.
Like nothing could make me happier than us to move towards a more of a PC culture. Cause I really don't like Max.
Oh my gosh.
I just wanted to slip that in somewhere. Do you see his picture in the article?
Yeah.
Like he doesn't look like someone I would think would have been a punk rocker. He looks like a mortician.
No. He looks straight from Hogwarts.
No, he does look a little bit like Snape.
He looks like he was in like he's maybe come from Whoville.
I was actually getting ready to say he kind of looks like a flesh colored Grinch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a great person. I mean, look at a lot of punk rockers nowadays. Yeah. I mean, 30 years later, 40 years later.
Yeah.
They don't look normal.
He's also Australian, so.
Something that reading the article, he explained. It's just one paragraph where he talks about, it doesn't really talk about him salvation coming to the Lord. He just says church going person.
Right.
But he says, he explains that he sees human beings in a completely different way than he did when he was early in his career, obviously when he was living a different life. And now he feels like a more complete person. Mm-hmm. And as a church-going person, he might seem unrecognizable. So what I love about all of this is, that whole paragraph is talking about the fact that, there is a change in him, mm-hmm. And that's what the whole point of coming to Christ is, right? And salvation is that you walk away from that changed, and in this, it's a great example of someone who dramatically changed, and their life went from one side of the pendulum to the other. And I think that's great. I think also too, a lot of folks can not think, man, is my experience really real? Cause I haven't had such a radical transformation. So I don't want to focus on, people thinking, oh, well, I wasn't a punk rocker. Now I'm saved kind of a thing. But I just think it's cool that, he really describes being changed,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's really amazing.
Well, one thing that he pointed out was, I've changed, because his values have changed, but I haven't changed that much because I still like to mess with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you can see that rebellious side in him. But it's what's interesting is that he pointed to nowadays I can just act like a conservative church-going Christian, and that's enough to mess with people.
Yeah.
And so it made me think, you know what? I think for most of us that have grown up in the Christian culture, and I grew up in Connecticut, you grew up in the North. Maybe it was a little bit different for y'all, but probably not. But if you really live a Christian life, it is countercultural and you feel it. It's like, mm-hmm. I remember as a teenager kind of being exhausted by, I'm just tired of standing out. If I really live my Christian faith, then I'm going to stick out like a sore thumb. I'm not going to use the same words that other people use. I'm not going to smoke what they're smoking. I'm not going to drink what they're drinking. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be, you know what I mean? My conversation is just different. Mm-hmm. And then as I got older, I would challenge younger people, hey, if you don't want to be like everybody else, be a Christian. Mm-hmm. Because you will stand out if you want to be noticed. Most teenagers truly want to blend in. They want to follow the crowd. They want to be like everybody else. But that is the reality. And here he is saying that. And so my first question to you guys is one, is it impossible to be a Christian in today's world and not be countercultural?
No. Yes, it's impossible. That's what I'm saying.
I know there are lots of negatives. Yep. Impossible and not threw me off.
Yeah, I was
double negative.
I was trying to think it through, and it's just like, I mean, you might be able to be under the radar, but
I will say there are things, and we've talked about this in the past. There are things about the culture that are they want to take it over as like this is what morality looks like, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. You think about the social gospel in the early 1900s and late 1800s, I guess, things that are innately things that will overflow from a Christian life, being said that, this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to care for people. You're supposed to, mm-hmm. Care for the needy and things like that. Those are innately things that we're supposed to do as Christians. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, I think it's pretty impossible to be a part of the culture nowadays. Yeah. Even in the 80s when he was, big, being a Christian in that time period and more so now, I think it is impossible to be, not countercultural.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was, what he became known for as of lately is pushing back against the PC culture, or he would even use the term woke culture, which I know is kind of a big umbrella.
Yeah.
You can kind of make it to whatever you don't like, but he's talking about just the movement of if you don't believe this way, think this way, say these words, use these words, then you're you know, then you're either mean or you're unloving or hateful, whatever else. So he's pushing back against that. And it really got me thinking, you know, our culture, I don't know whether it's coming from government, I don't know where it's coming from, but even businesses are being pushed to, you've got to promote these things. Mm-hmm. And if you don't promote these things, then we're not going to support you. Mm-hmm. And I got to thinking through that. I'm like, is that really happening? Because you hear people talking about it, but I saw an article, and I'm not going to go deep into the woods on this, but it was from the New York Post, where it's just talking about that there is a CEI score that businesses have to, you know, they have to promote certain things and do certain things and be against certain things, or their score goes down. And that some of the banks and some of the big financial institutions are the ones that are saying, if you don't do these things, then we're not going to be funding you for, you know, or supporting you in certain ways. And I just got to thinking, if they're already doing this to businesses, and I've talked to a business leader here in the area recently, and he's saying, yeah, those things are happening. And that is a big push within our companies. Even.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that was such a, like a, there was a score. Like,
yeah.
How do you score that?
So workforce protections, no discrimination for employment, for sexual orientation or gender identity. And those are good things, but there's a score for it, for the CEI thing.
Includes the good place, you know, like making.
Which, by the way, I had to look up what CEI stood for. It's Corporate Equality Index.
Okay, right? There you go.
So there's a true index. Yeah. And then you have inclusion benefits. Criteria includes providing health benefits for, it says sex couples. I thought, well, maybe it was supposed to mean same sex, but no. Nowadays, like, you can be, a trans female dating a trans male.
It's hard to define.
Yeah, it gets complicated. So sex makes
sense. And by the way, CEI, 100%. Let me just read this definition because I think this is important to the conversation. CEI isn't about, oh, well, corporate equality is, okay, well, we have to hire a certain number of ethnic people, or we have to hire a certain number of handicapped people. No, CEI 100% is rating workplaces on equality and inclusion for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer employees.
So it's not?
It's not true. It's not really equality. It's equality towards a specific target demographic.
Okay.
So, and to me, it's crazy that there's this individual target demographic that companies are being rated on an index just for that target demographic.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like, that's just very bizarre to me.
So going back to this.
Definitely impossible to be part of the culture.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Well, if you think about China has the same thing for individuals.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that. For individuals, they will track, everything that you're doing, and if you get negative scores, then they will impact. It'll impact your life personally.
It literally is the good place. The show,
yeah, it's scary, and so it's like, you know. So right now, like, you know, there's authoritarian governments. Well, there's movements within our own country where it's just like, you know, where you can see where it could become very unpopular being a Christian. If you know, for myself. While I respect people who are gay, but I don't believe in gay marriage. I think marriage is something that's traditionally bound in religion, and it's between a man and a woman. So two women or two men getting, you know, coming together. Now, I'd say call it a civil union, and I'd be happy with that. If they want tax benefits from that, I'm happy with that. But I just had trouble calling it marriage myself. So having that kind of a belief system, you know, makes me very unpopular, right?
Well, I would add too, if you are a believer and you are not countercultural, that should be kind of a good gut check. Like, if you're pretty comfortable with where the culture's at or how things are going, you might need to, for myself even, need to analyze like those areas in your walk with Christ and in your faith, because like our faith is not of this world. It is not ever going to be of this culture. When culture starts defining our faith or interfering with it in that sense, like those two are very black and white to me.
Yeah. And you don't mean like, so you're not saying in order to be countercultural, you have to be like picketing and rioting.
Combative and attacking,
and aggressive.
I just mean
and
like,
just be holding to conviction.
Yeah, like this culture should not be like super comfortable to you, if you're just finding yourself being apathetic about your faith when it comes to where it meets culture, like that should be a problem. You don't have to be, actually you shouldn't be
hostile.
Yeah. You can have like a righteous anger against how things are going, but you know, that's not how we're called to respond to a lot of things. Now that's not me saying, I think there's a time when you have to make a stand.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So,
And that's where sometimes it's really hard. Like you can even kind of feel it's hard to just blend in. If you just want to blend in, you're kind of forced through conversation to pick a side a little bit. And it just, you know, I think there's a concern, one, that you may not be able to just, you know, keep your head low and avoid things. Mm-hmm. But within this article, I think what we're also seeing is it's not just Christians who are standing out. If you hold a different view, you're kind of being pushed to the right side. I don't know how many people who used to say, I used to be Democrat, but now I find myself being called a conservative, you know, mm-hmm. or a far right person, or and their cultural perspective is beginning to change as they're seeing more of an authoritarian left that's pushing an agenda.
Yeah.
And so so it's not just Christians who are kind of sticking out like a sore thumb.
Right.
There's other people as well.
And I don't want us to confuse that being a right-wing conservative means that you are being a Christian. Like we've said multiple times that you could have, you know,
different priorities
and different views than a conservative person and still be a God-fearing, believing Christian. So that's not what we're trying to say here.
Michael and I were having this conversation the other day, and for the first time in our lives as believers, we can recognize people with similar values who don't identify as Christians.
Right.
Yep. This is the very first time, and they haven't become a believer yet, but their values are starting to align with those of believers.
Yeah.
And so I think it's interesting that we're kind of starting to see a shift in the culture that I feel like is creating that kind of camaraderie between two very different people. And so I don't know.
Well,
it's kind of
interesting. You know, Alan's talked about this before. Our pendulum has swung culturally so far one direction, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say left or right kind of a thing, because it's not what it's about. It's just, it's crazy. I mean, like our culture has shifted to where we want to do gender surgeries on toddlers and give them drugs to change how they behave. And we want to give drugs to people in order to just keep them happy. You know, like our culture has shifted. We don't want immigration to be actual immigration. We want to just let people in. And it's like, wait, they're not paying taxes. They're getting free health care. I mean, like we've just gone so far that it's almost like people have had enough. And, you know, we're starting to swing back. Now, there's still a loud minority, because the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? Mm-hmm. There's still a loud minority that are pushing for that kind of stuff. And they're getting all the attention because in the news and the media gets ratings. But we are, like Alan said, we're kind of starting to see that push back. And that makes me happy, because, you know, there are a lot of people who don't, that maybe would identify with themselves as being on the other side of a table from where we would identify ourselves sitting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even they are going, this is too much. We've gone too far with this. We've got to come back to reality, you know? And so I think that's kind of where, you know, Cave is talking about, like, there are enough people that are so radical that by being conservative, you're being equally radical. And you don't even have to be radical conservative. You just have to be conservative.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's really interesting, especially from his point of view, not saying that he's like the perfect Christian that we should model ourselves after.
Right.
Especially since none of us know him.
Yeah. But especially like he made a comment that really stuck out to me in the article about like how political correctness has become its own religion in itself.
Yeah.
And it has all of the, I'll just read the quote because it's really good. It says, as far as I can see, because he's big on mercy and like the lack of mercy in culture is the reason why everything has gone the way it has.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that too. Like we've said, you know, like the lack of grace in our culture, in our, you know, these people that are growing up, a lack of grace and understanding what it is kind of leading to a lot of this. But he said that political correctness has grown to become the unhappiest religion in the world. It wants honorable attempt to reimagine our society in a more equitable way now embodies all the worst aspects of religion that has to offer and none of the beauty. moral certainty and self-righteousness, shorn even the capacity for redemption, has become more literally bad religion run amok.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
Religion without mercy is scary.
Yeah.
And you're seeing some of that lately. It's just like, and yeah, it's just, it's crazy. There's a lot of good stuff in this article. And again, we don't know, you know, Nick Cave at all, but I'm glad to hear about his story and about his journey towards God.
He may not be influential to us, but I guarantee you he's influential where he's at.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's good that someone who's influential is speaking out in favor of things that are positive.
Yeah. I asked you guys just to, what kind of advice does the Bible give us in a day like this? If you're painting a picture of maybe at least right now an authoritarian left, but you can also see as the pendulum moves back the other way, it's not just Christians who are going to be responding by pushing conservative values. You're going to have other people who have different opinions. Maybe they're going to want to swing an authoritarian to the right, you know what I mean, and enforce different laws, different issues. And so it's like, I think that we're entering a season as Christians where we have to have a great amount of wisdom that's led by, you know, by the Spirit of God, you know. And so what kind of advice would you guys give to believers as we're navigating really scary and uncertain times?
Yeah, I think to not proof text, like you could take any of the, you know, quotable verses out of context, but I mean, if anything is going to lead you to the mind of Christ and the ways that he, you know, like Jesus is teaching us how to be more godly people, first thing that came to my mind was Romans 12, 1-2. And it says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. So it's really on us to really seek and search what the will of God is through his word to understand how we're supposed to act in this culture. And if it's not of what God is teaching, then it is not of what we're supposed to be offering our bodies as living sacrifices.
Yeah.
you guys all thought of the same scripture, and I was like, oh, shoot, should I have thought of that as well? But
yes,
my mind actually went to Daniel, and honestly, just like all of Daniel is a good description. But
even the prophecies at the end?
Yeah, great. go ahead and read those as well. Yeah. But really just thinking about, like, if you're thinking of culture moving in and infiltrating you, King Nebuchadnezzar moves in, and Daniel has to not defile himself. He has to stick up for his faith. And so just looking at like verse 8, so Daniel determined that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine he drank. And then also just how God showed him favor throughout that entire time. And then in verse 20, it says, in every matter of wisdom and understanding that the king consulted them about, he found them 10 times better than all the priests and mediums in his entire kingdom. So even as a young guy, Daniel stands out against the culture, and people of that culture found favor in him and found him better, 10 times better than anyone else. And so, I mean, he's That's a great example.
Yeah.
I thought when you brought that up, I'm like, yeah. Why didn't I think of that one?
Yeah, Daniel's legit.
Yeah.
Pretty cool guy. Would have dated.
Yeah. He was countercultural, and he was called out on it, and he had to trust in God to intercede. Yeah. It's just like, absolutely. I went to 1 Peter chapter 4, and without reading the whole chapter, there's just a lot of good stuff that I'm going to highlight. Time for that, but. Yeah, it talks about Christian suffering. It talks about more the ethics towards the end times, and sometimes we can get like, well, we don't know when the end times, but every Christian generation has lived if Jesus was coming back, and they lived in difficult seasons. So, but it says like, be alert and sober-minded for prayer. So just talking about being prayerful people, maintain a constant love for one another. And I think he's actually talking about for one another in the church. Mm-hmm. When going through times where Christians might lose their jobs, be persecuted in certain ways, it's like we need to care for one another as a family. Maintain constant love for one another. Be hospitable to one another without complaining. you know, so there may be greater needs where we have to open up our homes more. Don't be surprised if you're going through difficulty, if we do enter into a time where people lose their jobs or being persecuted in certain ways. One, we shouldn't be surprised. One, the Bible speaks of this many times, right? As if it's unusual, but rejoice as you share in the suffering of Christ. If you're ridiculed for the name of Christ, you are blessed. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, we've talked about this all of our life. And we're like, are we really suffering? Is there really, you know, are we experiencing persecution? And most of the time we haven't been. It's been like we've been made fun of or this or that in school. And that's a level of where it's uncomfortable. But, you know, there have been Christians around the world all the time throughout our life, every generation of persecution.
And we being martyred, yeah.
Yeah, and we may be entering a time where the values of our country changes so much, we may not be able to live peaceably and still live out our faith. And that is scary, but these are good reminders from two Christians that are being persecuted from Peter, you know.
A conversation I get into a lot is, and we kind of talked about, you know, not being hostile. Our goal should never to be hostile. Do we need to stand up for what's right? Yes. Do we need to, you know, live out and stand and hold steadfast to our principles and our values and our faith in Christ? Yes. But that doesn't mean we need to become hostile. And so, you know, when we were kind of chatting about this, I semi sort of jokingly sent John 11:35, Jesus wept, you know, and obviously the story is Lazarus has died and he wept. And, you know, the thing is, like, that verse is a constant reminder to me. It's kind of an analogy, a picture for me of the world is lost and dying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that has two messages there. Number one, we can't expect the world to behave like we behave. You know, that's just not how, why would they? They don't have the Holy Spirit. They don't have Christ in their hearts. They don't have the values that we have in the sense of a loving God and a relationship with Jesus. So we can't expect the world to behave like we do. So we can't be hostile towards a world that behaves like that because we're not of the same thing. And then two, they're dying, you know, and so rather than being hostile and angry, we should, number one, we should want to save them, you know, we should want to share the truth with them, but we should hurt for them, we should feel for them, we should pity them, we should weep for the fact that they're dying without Christ, you know, and the only power of resurrection is in Jesus, and the only power of true salvation and the only power of eternal life is in Jesus. And so, you know, that to me is that kind of that second half of not only do we have our own steadfastness we have to hold to, but we can't just hold to our steadfastness, live in our bubble, and then hope that everything gets better, because it's not going to get better if we do that, because we have to engage, we have to weep for the culture that we're in, because they're lost and they're dying without Christ and without God and without eternity.
Yeah, and there's two, and I think that's the other side of the coin that we always have to remember. We have to live radically, and that does mean radically loving them, radically self-sacrificing. The other side of the coin is just like is speaking out against things that are not good or not healthy for society, you know, standing up for what is right. And so as a Christian individually, I hope everything that I do as I live my life looks radically different, but I hope it looks radically good, as in like loving, and even in the face of they don't agree with what I believe in, they see me being loving, caring. On the other side, you know, I love that we have Christians who feel called into politics, who are lawyers, who are pushing back against bad laws and against things that are unhealthy for our country. You know, you know, we're fighting some of those right now, and it's like those are good things. And even when it may put us all in a category that can look nasty, I'm glad. I'm so glad we have people that are pushing back against culture in that way, legally.
Yeah.
And so
stories like this are really like oddly uplifting and encouraging. Positive, K-Love. encouraging to me, though, because yes, while he was big in the 80s, I'm sure in Australia he's still a big deal. Yep. You know, I mean, it's not any different than a star from the 80s being a big deal now. And so he, as someone who is still messing with people by being a conservative person and a churchgoer, is probably facing a lot more of like our identification of persecution than I maybe ever will. And so the fact that there are very normal people who aren't going to, you know, be killed by spears or heads chopped off or die a martyr's death, anything like that. Like, he is doing this very publicly, and he's not just like, oh, I posted on Instagram that I'm a believer. He's like going out and speaking about these things. And so it's encouraging to me that there are people like this who are very, very pumped up about this change that they are able to see in themselves. And the saddest thing to me was that it took his son passing away for him to realize that his life had been incomplete before, and now he feels made whole. And so anyways, I just think it's encouraging that this guy is going to go against the culture, go against the grain in such a public way. And I will probably never, ever face the things that he'll face. People are so weird. I'm sure he's getting like death threats and psychotic stuff, but I can still live a very public life for Jesus in my own little realm. And this is what I'm called to do.
He probably also has Christians attacking him saying, oh, there's no way that you're, that your life has changed because you were such a terrible person and you did such like, terrible things.
That's that mercy factor. And so also he seems really intelligent, quite honestly, from just the way he's speaking in these. And so speaking in these articles and on podcasts and stuff. So I think that he understands mercy in a way that a new believer does. And maybe we've just been tainted by things for so long. So
I think Alan's hungry. He was eyeballing the mammoth meatball.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to end. I mean, mercy. I think that whole paragraph on mercy is what we're missing.
Yeah,
and where we can't even have a civil conversation without one side demonizing the other. And of course, we see it on our side because we know our side, and we know that we can lack mercy at times. Mm. But you're definitely seeing it from the other side, where there's a lack of civil conversation. And it's on a political level, and it's on a personal level. So we need to be, praying prayerfully, actively living our life in such a way that pleases God and points other people to Him. And maybe it's in a season like this that's so polarized where we'll see more people make a decision to follow Christ because they see the value in God's word, as in like, when we don't have this, our world turns out like this, you know? So who knows? So, all right, guys. Well, thank you for your input. And for those of you listening, we'd love to hear your opinion as well. So as always, like, subscribe, and share our content. But we'd love to hear from you as well. So have a great week. And we'll see you next week.
See ya.
Bye.